I cannot imagine what it must be like to live in a country where you are under control. I've been very interested to watch this World Cup. Have you noticed that in the 4 weeks that the World Cup's been on, there's not been 1 ounce of trouble at the World Cup? Not that we've known about. Not 1 ounce of trouble. And yet 2 years ago, Russian hooligans caused most of the trouble in France. And therefore you have to ask the question, have they controlled that even down to limiting the hooliganism? Have they ruled that event with a rod of iron? Have they portrayed what they want? Who knows? I've been to Russia. I've been to Russia only once. To go through passport control in Russia was quite a scary thing. To think what on earth was going on and the questions I was being asked. And then to go into the place and discover the architecture, the way in which it's all regulated. I went to Russia in October. And it was freezing. Why? Because the local authority hadn't yet turned on the heating for the city of Moscow. Because they decide when it's cold enough for you to have central heating, because they control all the central heating. This idea of living in a country that is so controlled that your every movement is being looked at, watched, and monitored is quite alarming. And yet there, people seem to flourish in the environment that they do. It amazed me to find salvationists there flourishing in environments that we just wouldn't be able to cope with. This idea of controlling, I think it brings me often down to many things, or one of the biggest questions in life. Does God control the events of life? Does God control the events of life? Tonight we've prayed for the church in Russia. What is within God's control? What is without God's control, even in that circumstance? You know, we read various different stories in the Bible that talk about God's control. We could find many of them. I could take you to Joseph. You know the story of Joseph, don't you? How all along the line, there's evidence of God's control. The brothers hand him over to be sold, and yet somehow, bit by bit, Joseph's story unfolds to the point that he is brought to the place where God is able to use him. David is exactly the same. The least of all the boys in the family, and yet raised through to become king of Israel. But I wanted to take you to a little story concerning Ahab. Ahab was a king in Israel. We read his story in 1 Kings 22. Ahab wasn't a particularly great king, and therefore God raises up Micaiah, a prophet of the Lord, to tell Ahab that you're going to fall in battle. You're going to die. And of course, he doesn't like this prophecy. Who would? Somebody coming up to say to you, actually, you're going to die, mate, and you're going to die in battle. So what he does, he craftily goes into battle in disguise. And so he doesn't go into battle as the king, wearing all the kingly robes, behind the troops, there marshalling his forces. He disguises himself so as to become not attracting the enemy's attention. And he hopes he's going to avoid them. And yet, God said through Micaiah, you're going to die on the battlefield. God's in control. And the narrative in 1 Kings 22 describes the crucial event. It says this, a certain man drew his bow at random and struck the king of Israel between the scale armor and the breastplate. Therefore, the king said to the driver of his chariot, turn around and carry me out of battle, for I am wounded. Ahab gets carried off and there dies at the side of the battlefield, according to 1 Kings 22. But look at that narrative. A certain man drew his bow at random. He wasn't aiming at any particular target. He drew his bow and aimed it at random. What do we notice? The arrow then strikes Ahab. Even though it's been pulled at random, the bloke's picking anybody he wants, the arrow strikes him in just the right place. Ahab's dressed in armour. If it had struck him there, it'd have bounced off. But it doesn't. It finds the one little join, and it pierces the join. Perhaps Ahab just spent in the wrong place at the wrong time. Who knows? But the arrow went in exactly the right spot, and it found one of the major organs that would kill him. And he died the same day, just as God had said. And you know, there's a little story that just says that God was in control of the events that day. Seemingly random events. He controlled when the man drew his bow. He controlled the direction of his aim. He controlled the moment the arrow was released. He controlled the fright of the arrow. He controlled the way that Ahab's armor was put on earlier on in the day. He controlled the position that Ahab took as the arrow came towards him. He controlled the arrow as it went and struck right deep enough to produce fatal damage to the organs. He brought Ahab to his death. It's just one of many incidents in the Old Testament where you see the control of God. And so I ask that question again. If God in the Old Testament showed that many, many times he was in control, just who controls the events of life nowadays? In your life, who controls the events of your life? I believe in a God who's sovereign. I accept everything that Psalm 46 says. I believe God orders everything. I believe God controls everything. I believe God rules over everything. I believe he is sovereign. And yet, I can't quite take it to the extreme, because there are some people in our world that believe that nothing happens without the direct intervening hand of God, willing it so. Now, I struggle to grasp that idea. I struggle to grasp the idea that God determines and dictates all things that happen in life. I believe him to be all-knowing, and so he knows all that will happen. And yet I find it difficult to believe that God is responsible for and dictates the outcome of everything. If I'm sat on a hillside, and I'm watching the big dual carriageway below, and I can see a car coming that way, and I can see two cars coming that way. I can see from my vantage point on the top of the hillside, as the young sports car driven by the young man behind the first car going that way, he decides to overtake. I can see there's another car coming that way. I can see exactly what's going to happen. There's going to be a collision on the other side of the carriageway. Doesn't mean I'm responsible for it, even though I can see it from overhead. Nor does it mean I can do anything about it. But I do know it's going to happen, because I've got an advantage point of seeing it's going to happen. And so it makes me ask the big question, how does God's sovereignty and how does human free will interact? It's one of those debates that's older than time, because I don't believe that not everything that happens in life is God's will. If everything that ever happened on earth was God's will, then why would we have to pray the prayer that's written, that Jesus taught us, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven? I think to say that everything is under God's control can avert us from taking our own responsibility. So if I choose to follow a lifestyle that I know will harm me, is God in control of that? If I don't pay my bills on time, recklessly whittling away my budget on luxuries and go bankrupt with crippling debt, was God in control of that? If I don't resolve the failings of my relational behaviours, learn to manage my anger, and my marriage falls apart as a consequence, Is God in control of that? You know, some things happen in life that God hasn't intentionally controlled. Some things are just the course of nature. God does not control us. He does not give us free will and then take it away. What he does do is he gives us options. And what he says to us is, amongst all the things you can do in life, I want you to stay faithful to the covenant life. That which you've signed up to. But you know, the good thing is he doesn't smack us over the head with a sledgehammer when we're not able to either. Because I'm not able to keep up with the covenant life every day of the week. Are you? You know, in chapter 11 of Hebrews, we read that great list. Those who have walked by faith. It offers us a long list of women and men who've obeyed God, even when things didn't work out as they would expect. Their stories span thousands of years, don't they? They encompass murder, natural catastrophe, Noah, family treachery, physical weakness, failed dreams, missed opportunities, sibling rivalry, military conquest. And yet in that long list of all those people who were able to live by faith, that was the one thing they had in common. Everything they did in life, they did by faith. You know, how the events of life come about will always be a mystery to us. I have no idea why life has dealt you what life has dealt you. We'll never answer in this life what comes our way. But what we do need is to have a response to all the things in life that come our way. And what we need to do is respond to one of any events that come our way through faith. And just how do we live by faith in an uncertain world? How do those people in Russia who are trying to evangelize live by faith? Well, I think that passage in Hebrews chapter 11, the three little verses concerning Abraham, give us a little bit of a helping hand. Because living by faith means accepting God's call without knowing where it's going to lead us. What did the writer of the Hebrews say? He said this, by faith Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. Living by faith means accepting God's call without knowing where it's going to take you. When God calls, there are no guarantees about tomorrow. But to live a life of faith is to follow God without knowing where it will lead. And secondly, living by faith means waiting on God to keep his promises no matter what happens. There will always be a certain amount of disappointment built into life. And especially this life of faith. Sometimes I've met so many people as an army officer who seem to think that if they follow God's call, everything will work out and they'll be happy all the time. No, it doesn't work like that. You know, Hebrews 11 tells us that Abraham was motivated by a vision of something that the people around him couldn't grasp. Abraham's eye was on the eternal. Friends, we'll never find what we're looking for in this life. And therefore, it's important that we never lose sight of the hope that is in heaven and lose sight of the eternal, because we have to see it all as one great walk of faith. I read this little quote from a member of the Hillsong Church in Sydney, Tanya Harris. She's part of the worship team there. And she just wrote these words that really inspired me. Yes, God's awe-inspiring, miraculous and mysterious, all-knowing sovereignty means that while I make my choices, and they have consequences. A life consecrated to God means that he can take my fumbling weaknesses and use them for his glory. It means that when people wrong me and the consequences of their decisions fall upon me, I don't miss out on his favor. That no matter what happens to me that is outside God's perfect will, he is able to make all things work together for those who love him. You know, I asked the question 10 minutes ago, who's in control of life? Who controls life? You know, some things are going to happen to us all that God's not responsible for, that fall outside his will. And yet, even in those moments, God is able to work out things together for those who love him. This whole idea of who's in control was brought to me because I was thinking of that church in Russia. I was thinking what it must have been like to be a Christian in Russia. And do you know what? It's not all bad news. It's not all persecution. God is still working out his purposes. Even though he's not controlled them to be persecuted, he's still working out his purposes. Because I do want you to watch this video. It's from the USA Central. Because USA Central are partners in mission with the Eastern European territory. And for their self-denial, they've done a little video like we do in our territory. But they've done it for Eastern Europe. I want you to see how God is working out, even though he's not designed for those Christians to be persecuted, how he's working out for the good of those that are doing it there in Eastern Europe. Watch the video.
The Salvation Army started in 1865 and is actively ministering in 118 countries today. For the next few minutes, we will be looking specifically at the ministry of the Salvation Army in the Eastern Europe territory, which includes the countries of Russia, Ukraine, Georgia, Moldova, and Romania. The Salvation Army's work was initiated in Russia in 1910 and continued on and off until February 1923, when the Salvation Army had to completely close its operations and leave the country. Salvation Army activities were commenced in Russia in July 1991, and work extended to Ukraine and Georgia in 1993. Moldova in 1994, and Romania in 1999. These five countries form the Eastern Europe Territory, one of our USA Central Territory partners in mission. Geographically, the Eastern Europe Territory is the largest Salvation Army territory in the world. And while each of the five countries has countless blessings, they each also have unique challenges. Let's see how life in Eastern Europe compares to life in the United States.
The United Nations suggests a minimum of 5.2 gallons of clean water per person per day for drinking and personal hygiene. In Romania, 43% of people do not have access to 5.2 gallons of clean water per day.
When an American person showers for 5 minutes, he is using 15 to 25 gallons of water, more water than is available to hundreds of millions of people living in areas of the developing world.
Ukraine is experiencing one of the fastest growing HIV epidemics in the world, and during the last 5 years, the HIV prevalence rate has increased more than 20 times in that country. It is estimated that 1.4% of Ukrainians aged between 15 and 49 are living with HIV.
According to the Centers for Disease Control, the AIDS epidemic in the U.S. has been roughly stable since the late 1990s.
20% of people in Moldova live on less than $2 per day.
In the U.S., 17% of the adult population consumes a gourmet coffee beverage on a daily basis. These gourmet coffees cost between $2 and $4 each.
28 million people in Eastern Europe are experiencing chronic hunger.
34% of Americans are obese. Russia is a major source of women trafficked globally for the purpose of sexual exploitation.
Annually, thousands of Russian women end up as prostitutes in over 50 countries.
Some of these Russian women have been trafficked to the United States, where they are still living in forced labor situations.
In Ukraine, the average weekly wage is $50.70.
In the United States, an individual working 40 hours at minimum wage earns $290 weekly.
When Jesus spoke again to the people, he said, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." The Salvation Army in the Eastern Europe territory is helping to meet the spiritual and material needs of its people through various ministries in its 80 different churches and social services centers, including feeding programs, after-school programs, food and clothing distribution, hair cutting programs, home care programs, homeless children outreach, marriage preparation classes, medical programs. World Services donations from the USA Central Territory help make programs such as this possible and allow God's light to be shared with those in need. Dear children, let us not love with words or tongue, but with actions and in truth.
That was produced by the USA Central Territory for their self-denial missionary appeal. But why show it to you? Who's in control? God might not have controlled that these people live in poverty, might not control that people have AIDS, might not control that Russian women are trafficked into prostitution, but he is in control in that he uses his people who live a life of faith, who are willing to go, not knowing what tomorrow brings, to actually do and be his light and make a difference. Who's in control? Our God's in control. And he's working out his will and purposes using people who are willing to walk and live their life by faith. And maybe so for us. And as you go from this place tonight, may you know that you go knowing that God is in control. That God is in control. And that we are just simply asked to walk the life of faith, even though we don't know what tomorrow will bring, but trusting, believing that he will provide and he will be there with us. Now, as we go from this place, may the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, the love of God, and the fellowship of the Holy Spirit go with us. And as we go, my brothers and sisters, stand firm. Let nothing move you. Always give yourselves fully to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labor for him is not in vain. Amen. God bless you.